Welcome to Module 7, the what and why of boundary setting. In this module, we'll talk about what boundaries are, including the 8 main types, where we learn about them, and what makes them hard to set. We'll explore their role and importance in your life and the impact not having them has had on your life to this point. Finally, you'll develop your anchor thought, outlining why you need them and want to make a change in your approach, connecting it back to your goals for the course. So first, what are boundaries? Boundaries are the limits that we set with ourselves and others as we get to know ourselves and increase our self-awareness. They are, by nature, designed to ease tension, eliminate confusion, lessen decision fatigue, and allow you to align your life with your values. They also create a collective understanding or structure. Boundaries provide clarity. While healthy boundaries are flexible, they still offer context for what is and isn't okay, allowed, or possible. When you know a boundary up front, it can remove that feeling of personalization and reactivity when interacting with others, because when there's a no or a hard stop or a limit imposed, you can draw it back to the boundary that's been set independent of you. They aren't rushing me out because they don't care what I say. They told me they only had 10 minutes before I shared anything. Boundaries can support people in learning what it means to be there for and with you. They can help people learn how to show up for you, what you need and want, and also determine with greater ease if that's something they can do. The more direct and open we are in our communication, the more we can come to the table as ourselves. Now, in that same vein, boundaries shift how we think about power and control. Instead of hoping someone would do or say X, we can tell them what we need. We don't get lost in the feeling that asking means they don't care, but instead can shift into the belief that we have the right to make the ask or establish our needs. This helps remove that feeling of loneliness and resentment that many of us have been plagued with in a lot of our relationships. Boundaries keep us anchored. Healthy boundaries are rooted to our values, beliefs, and connection with the self. Setting boundaries can only be done effectively and healthily when we've done the work to clarify those pieces. When that work is done, and in large part when we move out of the stuckness brought on by shame, we can assert our needs with greater confidence and ease because we've internalized the belief they're about supporting us so that we can be our best selves, not about hurting anyone else along the way. And finally, boundaries align directly with assertive communication and living. Healthy boundaries are rooted in the belief that we and those around us deserve to feel seen, safe, and heard. And when a boundary supports us in being able to do that, we can show up with greater authenticity and comfort. Now, there are 8 main types of boundaries: physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, sexual, material, structural, and identity. Knowing the different types of boundaries and considering what and how they fit into the role and context of your life is incredibly helpful, as often we can limit our understanding of what constitutes a boundary. Now, your worksheet will take time to define each of these types of boundaries and give you different reflection questions and considerations for when and how to use each of these types. You'll also come up with an example role or relationship in which you have or need to set these boundaries and how this supports the role or relationship. Finally, you'll rank each of the boundary types from least to most difficult to set and reflect on what it is that makes different types of boundaries more difficult. Once you have a clear understanding of what a boundary is and how it can present itself, we'll move on to part 2. Where do they come from? Now, like most things in our development, we learn about boundaries through direct and indirect experiences with caregivers, peers, and communities at large. Our experience watching others set and respond to boundaries, our own experiences setting, maintaining, and responding to others' boundaries, and the internalization of cultural norms and systems are the primary foundation points for how we come to understand boundaries. So for most of us, primary influences included caregivers, peers, the media, and community observation. In your worksheet, you'll take time to inventory those primary influences and detail what you took from those sources and experiences. Now, as we go through all of this, we're beginning to bring awareness to the most important question in our work today. Why are boundaries so hard? What makes them so scary and overwhelming? Do you want to guess? I'll give you a hint. It's the number one topic in this course. Yes, shame. Why? Because of everything that we've learned about it to this point. Shame creates in us a belief that the only way to be worthy of love and connection is to act, look, and be a certain way. As such, most of us have developed a belief that the only way to secure our value is to either lose ourselves in taking care of other people, hence having no boundaries, or assume a position of power, meaning having boundaries that creates in others a means of submission. Primary entry points for shame-based boundary setting include caregiver modeling, so meaning what kind of boundaries did you have with and did you witness your caregiver setting, the internalization of biases and norms in a culture mounted on systemic oppression, early relationships with peers and partners, trauma, abuse, and intermittent reinforcement, or the inability to predict how someone will react to the same stimulus over time. So, for example, a client of mine grew up with a father with substance abuse issues, and she never knew when she came home if he'd be excited to see her or if he'd scream at or beat her. This disrupted her sense of rooting and security in her attachment and made it hard to know how to act or what boundaries to develop in that relationship and subsequently others. So to understand how shame has affected your own boundary development journey, we need to clarify when, how, and with who boundaries were dysfunctional, inconsistent, or non-existent. Part 3 of your worksheet will walk you through a series of questions related to this to help you really consider the impact and role of boundary setting or lack thereof in your early life. As you do this, be sure to consider early childhood and emerging adulthood, as this is a critical period of identity and subsequently boundary development. Unhealthy boundaries witnessed or experienced during this time can play a significant role in future relationships. From this point, we're going to shift gears back to the present to complete part 4 of our worksheet. How are we doing with boundaries in our lives today? So to do that, you'll first take time to reflect on what you've learned in the first part of this module. What comes up for you in all of this work and reflection? What conclusions can you draw about your relationships with and to boundaries? Second, we need to do a health status check, i.e., do you have healthy boundaries or not? So what do I mean by this? Well, a healthy boundary considers your wants and needs without dismissing those of other people. They affirm our sense of self and do not depend on the response of others to validate our right to set or maintain our boundaries. Healthy boundaries affirm our sense of self. Healthy boundaries are rooted to self-confidence and self-efficacy. They're also flexible and context-specific. They set foundations and general principles, but can shift if needed. The critical difference in flexibility versus erosion goes back to the first point. Flexibility still makes space to value your needs, wants, and values while also making space for others. Boundary erosion is about letting go of your boundary to dismiss your wants, needs, and values. For example, a flexible boundary shows up in how I parent Everly. We are very intentional with when and how often we use absolute words like always or never. If I tell her that she can never do or have something, that's setting a clear-cut, rigid boundary, which in some cases are important. Like she can never, ever, ever shove something into an electrical socket or eat animal poop. But outside of safety things, almost nothing exists in these extremes. She gets to watch one 30-minute show a week, most weeks. That's a boundary we have in our home around television and electronics. And most weeks we follow this. And when she got croup, she watched 4 to 5 episodes in one night of her show. When she took her first airplane ride, she got to watch way more than 30 minutes. The general principle or boundary is still consistent, but it's flexible in the context of what's going on in our lives. And finally, healthy boundaries are also about our response to other people's boundaries. Can we make space for it and honor it when someone says no or asserts a boundary? We might still be upset and get to validate those feelings, but are we able to respect the boundaries of others while we do that? Can we hold space for our own beliefs, opinions, and values in hearing those of others? Can we listen to others and allow them to have their own thoughts, feelings, and ideas, even if they are contrary to our own, without eroding or silencing our own or using ours as a means to dominate over others? And can we engage in appropriate sharing within that? The ability to set healthy boundaries requires self-love and efficacy, distress tolerance, and a high degree of shame resilience. Now, in contrast, unhealthy boundaries are rigid, inflexible, and often power-driven, i.e. about asserting dominance or assuming a subservience, and involve a disregard for your own or others' values, wants, and needs. So this could look like setting a boundary and then walking it back the first sign of pushback. So for example, maybe telling someone a project at work is outside of your scope, but taking it on anyways when they keep asking. Or telling someone what you need from them in a relationship, but then dismissing it under the guise of being too needy or dramatic. It could also be drawing a line in the sand that says you can never talk to someone who doesn't believe X or think Y. This frequently happens on social media, as we've seen increasing polarizing effects of politics and beliefs. While this may feel safe and necessary, and sometimes I know it truly is, these rigid lines are lines of reactivity derived from the growing anxiety, shame, and trauma that we've experienced on a collective level. All or nothing, yes or no responses lose sight of collaborative problem solving and community inclusive design, and make it so only X people are good and Y people are bad. It could also be taking responsibility for what's not yours. This shows up a lot when we get stuck in the cycle of shame and assume the role of being responsible for being and doing it all for everyone else. And if something goes wrong, it's on us. This is an erosion of boundaries, of personal responsibility and control. And finally, unhealthy boundaries assume or bulldoze past consent. This includes physical contact, like touching someone without their permission. I see this a lot with little kids and people saying, give me a hug, or give so-and-so a hug goodbye. Even in the park, when Everly asks someone for a high five and their caregiver says, give her a high five, that simple phrase is an erosion of someone's personal boundary. What if they don't want to do it or they don't feel safe? Everly is not owed a high five because she asked for it. She'll be okay if your kid says no. And she doesn't owe you a hug just because you want one. We have to realize what choice looks like and when we are absolving someone of that opportunity. Be sure to go beyond physical and sexual spaces as well. So for example, how often are you asked for permission before your doctor's appointment starts 30 to 45 minutes late? How often is consent sought before sharing something deeply personal or detailed? Now, as we went through these definitions and examples, most of you have started to allow shame to show up and sit beside you as you judge yourself for just how bad your boundary setting is. Remember not to get lost in frustration or self-judgment here. You are not alone. Most people struggle with healthy boundaries. I don't have great boundaries half the time. Boundary setting is one of the most complex skills to develop and requires such a high degree of self-awareness and efficacy that even the slightest bit of uncertainty can throw it off. You're not failing for having unhealthy boundaries. Go back and connect this to your past. It makes sense you have a hard time with boundaries. Now, as you think about this, we'll take it one step deeper in your worksheet, not only by exploring these definitions, but also considering some of the primary stuck points and symptoms that we can experience when and if we have unhealthy boundaries. From here, we're going to consider the effects of not having healthy boundaries. So, how has this affected you in your daily life? How has it affected your TFAC system? How has not having boundaries been a contributor to TME overload or your presenting problems when you started this course? Now, are there any positive effects associated that might make it difficult to change how you engage with boundaries? And finally, what do you want to change and why? Where, how, and with who do you want to make changes with boundary setting? Are these changes internal? So something with yourself or external? In what context do we need these boundaries? And why does making this or these changes have a positive impact on your life and the goals of this program? In the next module, we're going to shift gears to talk about the how with regards to boundaries, diving deeper into all of this and making a boundary inventory to determine what boundaries need to be set, with whom and in what roles, and exactly how to put them into practice. You're going to feel a pull to dive deep into action after doing this work. That or a pull to completely detach from overwhelm. Neither one of those responses is wrong or bad. It's the system trying to make sense of a lot of intense information. Remember to stay the course. Disconnect the thought from action and allow yourself to think and feel whatever comes up for you and come back and focus on the next 1% when you're ready. This is a great time to revisit your self-care guide if you haven't been in touch with it in a while, and of course, connect with other TLAR community members about what's coming up for you in the discussion forum. And when you're ready, I will see you back here for part 2 of our boundary setting.